Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is LVC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello, good afternoon to you if you're just joining me here at LBC. The trial of Derek Chauvin continues. The actual process is over, but the verdict is being considered by the jury as we speak. Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent, joins me to talk about the latest on the actual trial and also the implications of the verdict, whatever way it falls. Simon, has the court resumed again yet?
Yeah, they resumed about an hour ago after having deliberated until 8 o'clock local time last night. So they had a 12-hour break overnight. I mean, the latest is there is no latest because obviously we are simply now waiting for the jury to make their minds up. They've got three choices. Second-degree murder, which is the most serious charge that Derek Chauvin faces. Third-degree murder, which suggests less intent to kill than the second degree murder charge. And then there's also a manslaughter charge, which is the least serious charge that he faces. So, you know, on the one hand, you can say, well, there's not very much for the jury here to spend much time mulling over. This is not a particularly complicated case. They're not looking at a whole array of different charges or crimes that they have to adjudicate. It's one alleged crime, and they have to decide whether they think Derek Chauvin committed intentional murder, unintentional murder, or the lesser charge of manslaughter, or they have to decide whether to acquit him. And certainly in the closing arguments that we heard yesterday, they were presented with a very stark choice. Take a listen to what Steve Schleicher, the prosecutor who was presenting the prosecution's closings, told the jury yesterday about what happened to George Floyd on May the 25th last year.
He was trapped with the unyielding pavement underneath him, as unyielding as the men who held him down, pushing him, a knee to the neck, a knee to the back, twisting his fingers, holding his legs for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. The defendant's weight on him.
So while the prosecution was clearly suggesting that only Derek Chauvin is to blame for George Floyd's killing, the defense told the jury that wasn't the case, that George Floyd's pre-existing opioid addiction, his pre-existing health issues, even the possibility that he had gulped too much carbon monoxide from the exhaust pipe of the police car may have contributed to his death. Here's the lead defense lawyer, Eric Nelson.
In this case, the totality of the circumstances that were known to a reasonable police officer in the precise moment the force was used demonstrates that this was an authorized use of force, as unattractive as it may be. And this is reasonable doubt.
So the defense argument is Derek Chauvin did things by the book. George Floyd was a very complex suspect who scuffled with police rather than obey their instructions to get into the back of a squad car, and that the case it has got sufficient doubt as to the cause of George Floyd's death that the jury must acquit. Remember, as we've said before, Sheila, it's only going to take one juror to take a look, not at that 9.5-minute video of Derek Chauvin with his knee on George Floyd's neck. But at the earlier videos of George Floyd scuffling with police, only one juror has to say, well, this guy's behaviour was very combative and non-cooperative, and therefore perhaps the police didn't have any alternative to behave the way that they did.
Well, that begs questions about police training, but we can come on to that in a moment. The jury itself, the jury process, selection process in America is incredibly dense, isn't it, when it happens? This is a jury, 6 are white, 4 are black, 2 multiracial, 7 women, 5 men.
Yes, and of course the racial composition of this jury, mixed as it is, was hard fought for 2 weeks before the actual trial began, with both the defence and the prosecution seeking to secure a jury that would be most advantageous to them. One of the interesting aspects of this trial is that as a result of COVID-19 restrictions, but also the rules of the court in light of COVID-19, not only is the jury's anonymity being preserved. We've never seen them, of course, on any of the camera feeds that have been made available to the media. But there's also been very little indication from pool reporters inside the room as to exactly how the jury has reacted to testimony. And that's partly because of where the jury is seated in the courtroom. So the jury, in many ways, is a mystery to all of us. We don't, we haven't seen reports where people are saying, okay, juror number 3 grimaced when she saw that particular video footage. In fact, there's been more emotion on the part of pool reporters, many of whom have tweeted out over the last few days that they cannot bear to watch the video of Derek Chauvin subduing George Floyd again. We don't know if any jurors have reached that conclusion, and that's why I think there is so much uncertainty about the hours ahead, and of course about the consequences of what the jury may be over the next few hours about to do.
The thing I want to discuss with callers, and I'll discuss with you prior to that, if I may, just to get clear what's in my mind, is the degree to which this verdict, whichever way it goes, turns out to be a moment of reckoning, not just for gun use, because I think that's clearly a much wider question than just policing, but for police gun use and police training and police recruitment and how police respond to truculent and difficult prisoners.
Mm. Look, we have never seen before the weight of a police department brought to court, willingly showing up in court, including the Minneapolis police chief and others, to testify against a former officer. It's absolutely apparent that the Minneapolis police chief and leading officers within the force want this trial to result in a guilty verdict. Now, you can wonder about the reasons for that. Is it because they fear the paroxysm of violence that will follow in Minneapolis if Derek Chauvin is acquitted? Is it because they absolutely genuinely believe that he disgraced the badge and needs to pay the kind of price that no other police officer in living memory who disgraced the badge in a similar way has paid in the United States? Is this trial truly a turning point? Take a listen to what the Reverend Al Sharpton, who was outside the courthouse yesterday praying with members of the George Floyd family, had to say about the historic context of this trial.
Because many of us, whether it be in the Congress or in the streets, have kept this fight going, and we are going to keep the fight going. Whatever way this verdict goes, we won't stop till the laws change.
Amen.
And the behavior change.
We won't stop until the law and the behavior changes. And that gives you an indication that community activists certainly don't think anything ends with this trial, but they hope that something might be beginning.
What preparations are being made for the verdict externally?
There was already absolutely massive security around the courthouse. There has been throughout this trial, and key local government buildings in Minneapolis. 3,000 National Guard troops have been on the streets of the city since the trial began. Those numbers are swelling. The mayor of Minneapolis made it apparent just before the trial began that in its closing stages he was going to flood additional security onto the streets. public schools in the city, as of tomorrow, are moving to an entirely virtual schedule. There will be no in-person learning.
Really? So this is children stay at home?
Yeah, children stay at home, get off the streets. That's how worried they are about what's going to happen on the streets of the city. And look, I mean, it's very easy to overplay the sense of anxiety. And I suppose the big question will be if Derek Chauvin gets found, if he's convicted of the most serious charge, second-degree murder, does that take the sting out of some of the protests? And remember that the protests have also been accompanied by violent looting. You've seen African-American-owned businesses, Asian-American-owned businesses in Minneapolis destroyed and torched at the hands of looters in the immediate aftermath of George Floyd's killing. Their fear is that something similar might happen after the verdict comes in, regardless of what the verdict proves to be. But there's no question that the authorities in Minneapolis are taking this very seriously. And it's not just Minneapolis. We know of plans to protest in New York, again, regardless of the verdict. There will be protests in other major cities across the country. And there's nervous hours ahead for the White House because Press Secretary Jen Psaki indicated yesterday that the Biden administration wants to give protesters, as she put it, the room to engage in peaceful protest. But what she didn't address is what is Joe Biden and the White House going to do if those protests get violent and are accompanied by substantial amounts of looting and criminal behaviour.
Thanks, Simon, for now. Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent. Any big developments in that case, Simon, will bring them to us. Of that, I have no doubt.
Thanks for listening to Simon Marks reporting. And if you like what you heard, click the subscribe button and come back soon for more. And I'd love it if you'd give me a review. Those can be hugely helpful in spreading the word. Thanks a lot. More from me soon.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.